This is the Florida Spectacular Podcast with your hosts, Kathy Silustri and Rick Kilby. Keep up with Kathy at greatfloridaroadtrip.com and on Twitter and Instagram at Kathy Silustri. Find Rick on Twitter at OldFLA and visit his website, rickkilby.com. Now, discover a Florida you never knew existed.
How the hell are you, Rick?
We had this thing where water falls from the sky this morning, and actually thunder and lightning. It was like an afternoon thunderstorm between 8 and 9 o'clock. It was quite unusual and a nice change of pace. I didn't get to get my walk in, but we sure need the rain. We've had a couple showers in the last few days.
We are still down in the Florida Keys, and there has been no rain, but I'll tell you, the wind, I think yesterday was the strongest it was. It was up to 26. And most nights we haven't had to run our air conditioner or anything, which is unusual for May in the Keys. But definitely no rain. Rain would be nice. Rain would be cooling. The air is starting to feel very, there's a lot of weather in the air. You know what I mean when I say that?
Like, yeah, you feel yeah, it. Yeah, yeah. Because it's interesting, before we got into this little, we started having rain again, it was a strange dry heat that I don't associate with Florida. It didn't seem like there was the normal amount of humidity.
No, there needs to be air in the air. I can't do it when it's dry.
Yeah. So the last couple of days, it feels properly humid. And, you know, even after this rain, it didn't cool it off at all. It's like normal Florida in summer in May, up here anyways.
Finally, I mean, I'm used to it, right? Like, I'm not used to being on a little skinny island camping on the Atlantic, but I'm used to the Florida weather in the weather. I don't know how else to say it. There's weather in our weather. You go out to Arizona, there's no weather in their weather. There's no air in their air. It's dry and it sucks and everything bleeds. My face cracks. My attitude is not good, but I'm used to the summer storms, and I can feel them. They're not here yet, but I can feel them ramping up, and it's a very exciting time for me. And I know we're not supposed to say that, because with summer storms in Florida, of course, comes hurricanes, and we're supposed to dread hurricanes. How do you feel? You live inland, and I feel like, I want to know how you feel about hurricanes, but I want to preface that with saying, people think people in Orlando are safe from hurricanes, but I feel like every storm we have where they evacuate, anybody I know who goes to Orlando either gets stuck in tornadoes or flooding. I feel like it's far worse inland than it is right on the coast. But maybe, you know, how do you feel about hurricanes?
Well, I live in a wood frame house, and during hurricane season, I wish I had a concrete block house, because I feel vulnerable. Most times, if it's a significant storm, we will leave and go someplace that feels safer. And I also live on a lot with giant live oaks. And the live oaks, actually, you know, they hang over the house. And so I'm always at risk. There's a, you know, from where I sit right now, I'm probably 15 feet from the trunk of a live oak. And then in my front yard is a huge live oak. And, it's scary. We get them trimmed every few years. We'll maybe due for a trim again. That's what I worry about. I worry about the home most of all. We're going to make sure that we're personally safe, you know, that our bodies are not at risk and go someplace, but I worry about our property.
I can see that, because live oaks are beautiful. They are majestic, wonderful trees. There's nothing I love more than when there's certain parts of Florida, we're driving across the state, you'll see this field and it will be all these beautiful live oaks and cabbage palm trees living together. But by the same token, I had a horticulturist tell me once before, you can never really tell what's going on with the tree inside. And that was because we had a church in our neighborhood where there was a live oak, there was a storm, and the tree came down, and no one knew the tree was really in trouble. But when the tree came down, you could see it was all hollow inside. So I'm not setting your mind at ease for the forthcoming hurricane season, all I know.
Well, it's interesting, because there's one right along our lake, and four different times it's had what they call catastrophic limb failure, where limbs basically the size of whole tree trunks fell. There's one currently now, it's kind of resting on the bottom of the lake bed that we haven't had removed because the tree trimmer said, the only way I'm going to do this is if I can get, you know, a crane in your neighbor's backyard and just lift the whole thing off and cut it up in your neighbor's yard. And I've never, it's a whole story that, you know, the neighbor's never there and I've never been able to get permission. So, you know, it's honestly, it's created a lot of habitat for wood ducks and turtles and things. So I've just left it laying there. But if that were to ever to happen over our house, it would be very scary.
Knock on wood. Maybe some so nice, that, good live oak wood.
Yeah, but you know, it's interesting because growing up in Gainesville, I only remember a couple times where we ever got nervous of hurricanes. You know, as a kid, you know, there was that long span of decades and decades where Florida was very lucky. And we just, 2004 kind of broke the spell. Where, you know, I remember one was supposed to come through Gainesville when I was in college there, and we taped up our windows and nothing happened. We got the day off from class and the tape stayed on our windows for years after that because we were lazy college dude, never took it off.
Well, it doesn't work either, but, you know, it's it was a cute thing we did in the 80s, right? Let's tape our windows and pretend
exactly.
That's going to work.
Exactly.
And you talk about 2004, that is... that was the year I got angry, not at the hurricanes. I got angry at the so-called forecasters because there's a phrase we use, I use, that I learned from somebody who used to own some boats, weather terrorists, right? So they want to keep everybody scared. So they keep watching or they keep listening. And 2004 was the year my family from out of state stopped asking me if we were okay when they watched the news because I got so mad and I would say things like, you know, it's on the wrong side of the state. Learn, turn off your damn TV. Stop watching. Go to hurricanes.gov. I mean, it's a little bit of a problem in that it's such good money for media outlets that some of them give into this temptation to pander to people's fear and they scare them. And, you know, it's years ago, I worked at a radio station and we had something called a standing insertion order. And the standing insertion order was basically a part of the contract with certain companies that as soon as a storm had a name, the contract said, run this spot for the hardware store, the tree trimming company, you know, once an hour. So there's money in it. There's money in these storms. And the problem is we make every storm, we blow up the storm. We get it so ballooned in the public mind that I fear we're doing this boy who cried wolf thing where, you know, the storm misses us, the storm turns. I read somewhere online and I love it, is waiting for a hurricane is like being stalked by a turtle. And it's true, but it gives the media, and I am part of the media, so I can say this, I'm not, you know, criticizing something I have no experience with. It gives them a lot of time to whip people up. And then the storms usually hit somewhere, but very, very rarely do the storms hit where people think they're going to hit 10 days out. So people get complacent. It's a problem. But you know, there's things you should do to be prepared for a hurricane, but I don't know that, you know, we need to really get all worked up about it. I had lunch earlier this week with a gentleman who owns the Keys weekly newspapers, and they do a hurricane guide. And I said, oh, do you do a map? And he started laughing. He goes, why? So people could sit home and plot the little dots. I'm like, well, we used to do it. We used to do all that. But, you know, why are we talking about hurricanes on the Florida Spectacular? One of the points I make about hurricanes, it is because of Florida that the National Weather Service is as good as what they do. And, you know, we've learned from a lot of mistakes. Things have evolved. I have a picture from, I guess it would be the 20s, of a warning block. Like, this is how we used to warn people now. We've gone from a block with a little flag on the end of it that says hurricane, that they would drop out of planes in areas likely to be hit, to getting our updates every 3 hours from hurricanes.gov. But we used to warn people by dropping messages out of planes. It's wild to me how much stormcasting has evolved. And a lot of that is because of Florida being the front lines in the continental US of a hurricane. I could talk about hurricanes for hours. So you're going to have to stop me. I love talking about hurricanes.
I think also Katrina was kind of a big thing that shifted. I used to do a lot of work for a big corporate entity in the Panhandle, who was involved with real estate, and their business was undermined significantly after Hurricane Katrina because people didn't want to buy property in the Gulf for a long time after that. And I think, you know, that maybe created more fear in a lot of people's minds because of you know, the loss of life and, you know, seeing a major metropolitan area pretty much underwater. What do you think about that?
I think that Katrina was bad. Katrina definitely gave people pause. What makes me a little concerned about that is that it doesn't seem to give us more than pause. We pause, but we don't stop. It's Katrina, incidentally, the hurricane of 1928 was a blueprint for Katrina, and it happened in Lake Okeechobee. I mean, the same things that the poorest minorities didn't have the means to evacuate. A levee burst. I mean, it was horrific. Mass burials and funeral pyres, largely for poor Black farm workers. You know, the white guys who owned the agriculture down there near the Everglades, they didn't actually have to live there, so they could get out. So we only had the devastation of the hurricane of 1928 because of not one, but several bad decisions, right? And I think the same thing is true with Katrina. You know, these disasters, it's really rare. Even with something like a Union Carbide, it's really rare when you see these disasters and you can point to one single thing, right? Like, so with Katrina, maybe the hubris of thinking we could redirect water and put people where the water used to want to go. That's one, because you live in Florida long enough, one of the things you learn is water is going to go where water wants to go, and it doesn't give a rat's red ass where you think it should go. But we keep trying, you know, but it doesn't work. So one, we probably should not have tried to build a levee. Two, probably should not have built housing there. Three, should not have built the kind of housing that was affordable to people who didn't have the means to evacuate if they needed to. It's a series of missteps, and we've done it. Hurricane of 1926, hurricane of 1928, Hurricane Katrina. You know, there's some hope there that between 1928 and 2005, which was when Katrina was, that's a long pause, but we still did it. And we don't know what other low-lying areas are going to be hit next. It's, you know, Immokalee, very vulnerable, probably not as vulnerable as some other places, but still vulnerable. Still haven't done a lot to be able to get people out of there if we need to. You know, you're also talking about populations, and this has came up during the pandemic. You're talking about populations that maybe don't have great internet or any internet at their house. So they're not having the opportunity to go to their computer and type in hurricanes.gov and get real-time information. They're at the mercy of whoever's broadcasting. And those are the people who are going to get the boy who cried wolf tragedy, because they're going to be inundated only with these. This is the end. You know, it's the apocalypse. It's this. This is the big one every time. And they're going to get complacent. Like, they always say that and it doesn't happen, so why should I leave this time? So that is my very, very long answer to a question that I bet you didn't realize I had thought that much about, but I think about it a lot.
It is fascinating because I'm involved with a lot of kind of local history groups on Facebook, and there was these pictures that would come up on social media from time to time showing the urban lakes of Orlando kind of forming one big lake. You know, I'm not sure when it was, teens or 20s. You know, we had photographs and it was print and printed in the newspaper or something. And so people kind of, you know, thought that was remarkable that, you know, Lake Davis and Lake Cherokee and all these other lakes would kind of form one big lake. But we thought it would never happen again, because what the city did was they do pump water from lake to lake to lake. And then the lake I live on is actually pumped into a surficial aquifer. It's pumped underground. So nobody thought it was possible until Hurricane Ian hit and the same thing happened in the same places. And it was kind of mind blowing. You know, and I went out, I remember when it was safe to go outside and walk, I walked around to witness it. And I got to the like furthest point away on my walk, and I realized I had to retrace my steps because I couldn't get home unless I wanted to go through that nasty water, which no telling, because there were parts where there was obviously sewage coming out. I could see toilet paper and stuff. So yeah, it was disgusting. So I wasn't going through the water. So I had a very long walk that day. But to think that that would happen, when was Ian? 2022, a couple years ago.
Ian was 2022. Idalia was 2023. I just can't wait for what this year brings.
Now, the interesting thing, too, is some of these homes, and some of these homes were built in the 20s. It's a historic area. Were damaged, and you know, some of them were knocked down. So I could tell, I could show you lots where there was enough damage that they decided they were just going to knock their house down and, you know, ultimately rebuild or sell the lot. And some of them, you know, had a dumpster in their front yard and were recently just fixed again, you know, and the process lasted over a year, 18 months for some of these houses. And that's kind of what scares me, because you know, when you are displaced from your home, there's a certain comfort level that you have with your home. And when you're displaced from that, it is tense.
Well, and it's you talk about the long-term displacement. There's a couple of things I want to say about that, but short-term evacuating. We are 30 to 38 feet above sea level, two different surveys, blockhouse, hurricane windows. Roof's going to do what it's roof. And it's almost a never for us. If you talk about when would we evacuate? And one of the reasons for that is what you're talking about, the displacement. I mean, you don't know how long you're gone, but also for me, you don't know what's happening back there. So we don't live on a barrier island. We live on the salt water, but we live on a bay. The barrier islands are about a mile out from us total. And on the barrier islands, St. Pete Beach, Treasure Island, Madeira Beach, you know, they have bridges, two ways, two bridges on and off, right? They lock those down and they give residents and business owners, they, you know, you have to show proof and the city will issue a reentry permit. And they do a really good job of locking down the beaches. So you have some security if you live on one of the beaches and you leave. That after the storm passes, even if you can't get back that first day, nobody's going to be coming in and looting or any of those things. You don't have that on the mainland. We think about that a lot. Like if, for example, Pinellas County has one, you can enter from the north side, like US 19, you can drive off the mainland. It's a peninsula on a peninsula. But then we have a couple of bridges. And once the storm passes, they clear those bridges, you know, say, yes, they're structurally sound. You can travel over them. If you can't get back to your house, somebody else can, right? It's not as secure. So there's that issue of displacement in the immediate. But in the long term, I don't think you hit on something that I don't think people think about, and that's how long recovery takes. I'll give you an example. Hurricane Irma, 2017. You're noticing an I. You know, the letter I seems to be what's hitting Florida. Hurricane Irma decimated the lower and part of the Middle Keys in 2017. Bahia Honda State Park, which is one of my favorite places to camp, is just below Marathon, just above Big Pine. So it's in the lower Keys. One of the campgrounds, the Sandspur campground, was decimated in 2017. And now that's not a high-end campground. It's literally two roads, some camping pads that are gravel, electric, stubbed out for electric and water, and one bathhouse, and that's it. They reopened. They couldn't even get that campground reopened until 2023.
Wow.
So Long Key State Park, same deal. Not a lot of amenities. They had all the sand from Long Key State Park, which is Long Key, which is above Marathon. During Hurricane Irma 2017, all the sand ended up in US 1. The new bathhouse, which was built to specs to withstand a hurricane, made it through, but nothing else did. They still have not reopened that campground. And it's a long time coming. Up in the panhandle, Michael, there was a fishing pier in, I think, Port St. Joe. Hurricane Michael was what, 2018, 2019? That's not rebuilt yet. Recovery isn't fast. Like I'm surprised anybody in Florida was impatient about getting the COVID vaccine, because we know how slowly the wheels of life turn. If you've lived through a hurricane in the aftermath, you know nothing happens fast. So it's a long time. If that was your home for a year, what do you do for a year? Is your insurance going to pay for you to live somewhere else while you still make your mortgage payment? It's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I think about, there's a book, I think it came out in the late 1800s, called Oranges and Alligators. Hardy, I think, was the author. And it talks about how, you know, Florida, there's a great quote, Florida's the most lied about state in the nation. You know, everybody thinks it's paradise, but it's, you know, and some people realize it's hell, but it's, the truth of the matter is right in the middle, that there are some aspects of Florida that are paradise. You know, you're in it right now. You're in this wonderful place, but there are other aspects that you have to learn to live with that kind of balance it out. And, you know, so sometimes it's heaven, sometimes it's hell, you know, and, you know, that day after a hurricane comes and you don't have power and you're trying to eat stuff out of your fridge before it goes bad. And that first night you have to sleep without power. It's so rough. The second night, after Charlie, we went to a hotel just because we wanted a good night's sleep. You know, that's really why we wanted, you know, just to have toilets and all that kind of stuff that you're used to. And it felt so good. I remember the first time after Hurricane Charlie, we went into a restaurant that had air conditioner, and it's like, you didn't want to leave. You know, you take these things for granted, but air conditioning, you know, it seems like it's always cold here in the summer because every place cranks up the AC and it's way too cold. But when you don't have it, you certainly miss it.
Well, my mom and dad, which is my mom now, but they had, they have central heat and air. They have a decent generator, and they actually had a window unit installed in the back bedroom specifically so that post hurricane, they could run the refrigerator and that wall unit AC.
That's actually smart. I don't,
it's,
you know, I haven't
really
taken,
smart.
It's hard for me because I don't have a garage. I don't have anywhere to store some of this stuff. I don't have a generator, but you know, after Hurricane Charlie, you know, I remember that's one of the things you could hear is you could just hear the generators all around you constantly all night long. And, you know, that's the other thing. You sleep with your windows open because, you know, you have to try and get a little bit of breeze or air moving. And just the sound of the generators all night long was so
yep.
loud.
It's the sound of the generators. That's the, you know, it's the sound of Florida summer almost. And you know, hurricanes, I don't want to paint too rosy a picture of the aftermath, but I have to tell you, post Irma, you know, Gulfport, where I live, we didn't have water. The way the tides worked and the side of the storm that came through, it actually sucked the water out. But it was pretty bad. Otherwise, we had a lot of trees down. We had linemen working for more than a week to get power back to people. And a lot of the linemen were from out of state, and they'd say, we've never seen this many trees before, which is a good thing, right? But some of them hadn't been kept up, and we have alleys, and they had fallen on the line. So we did have this nice little thing going on in that people who had power would set out electrical strips. They would you know, post on social media. They would put signs out saying, I have ice and air conditioning. The city opened up as many buildings that had power as they could so people could come in during the day and stay cool. It was really nice. And in fact, a neighbor we had not gotten along with, it changed our relationship with them. You know, we have a much better relationship now. So there are some situations. I feel like we see a lot of stuff on the media of people looting or whatever, but I think these types of things can also bring out some of the best, which is nice. It's a shame we have to knock down houses and flood cities to do it, but if you can catch a glimpse of humanity, that's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember something similar after Hurricane Charlie. There's a 7-Eleven down the road, and you know, we all need our coffee fix.
Yes.
So there's like this steady stream of traffic going down our street to the 7-Eleven, or at least hoping they would have coffee down at the 7-Eleven. And, you know, you interacted with all those people who you never would have talked to before. And it was very nice. And I remember last storm we got, I was cleaning up my yard. I talked to a neighbor who I've talked to maybe a couple times since, but it kind of tears down the social barriers, I think. And you're collectively joined by this thing you've weathered and gone through together. And it is a beautiful thing in a way. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, a lot of stuff has changed since we've had major storms, you know, and the main thing being the insurance situation, where that's a whole other thing. And I think a lot of the reasons why some of these houses near me took so long to get repaired after Hurricane Ian was they were waiting for insurance situations to be resolved. And I know I've heard this recently that you're not allowed to touch anything if you make a claim on insurance. So you can't start working on stuff yourself because that could jeopardize the situation with your insurance, which, you know, could, you know, make things worse. Things will continue to deteriorate inside your house.
And I'll add to that, not that this matters if you're not living in the house. If you have a rental property and you have it insured and you have not told your homeowner's insurance, if you've led the homeowner's insurance to believe that that is your primary residence and they found out you're not, they will absolutely not pay that claim.
Wow.
I mean, I get that, right? It's a higher insurance rate to insure a rental property because the thinking is that, you're not going to take as good care of something you don't own as something you do own, right? So maybe the renters don't keep up with it. So they want to charge more because they think they're going to pay out more, but they will investigate that. They will definitely look at that. So, I mean, insurance is, you almost want to just self-insure because insurance companies are not in the business of helping people, despite what, you know, the good neighbor commercials might tell you. Probably not going to get Allstate to sponsor the podcast.
There goes another one.
Well, you know, Allstate won't send us black coral rum, so it's okay. You know, it's expensive too, because we have this other thing. I don't know if you're aware of this, but there's kind of it's not really a scam, but there's something going on where there are some roof repair companies that will come by and go, you know, even if you don't think you had damage to your roof in the storm, let us take a look. And they'll come up and they'll go, oh, yep, you have damage. We're going to put in a claim with your insurance. It's not going to cost you anything but your deductible and you're going to get a new roof. And sometimes they don't really have damage. Mm-hmm. You know, so, but they're charging the insurance company for it. So that's not helping either. It's going to get worse before it levels out, I think, with insurance. We're in a little bit of a mess here. But yeah, I want to just put in my thing to say, hurricanes are only a problem if you've built something. If hurricanes that come through an area where there isn't a lot of development, the damage is not nearly as severe. And it took me a long time to realize that not everybody hates hurricanes as much as we do in Central Florida on the coast. I was working on Back Roads of Paradise and we were up in the panhandle. And I always pick up the local papers because I want to know, you know, get the flavor of place if you can pick up their little weekly or something like that. And I read an interview in one of those papers with a state park ranger, and he said, well, the problem is we need rain with a name. And they were talking about the fire damage, because the Panhandle has a good bit of forest. And I took me a minute. I'm like, wait a minute. They're asking for a hurricane. Rain with a name, of course, being a hurricane. And hurricanes do serve a purpose. I mean, they very much have a part of nature's grand design, right? It keeps the forests from spontaneously catching fire. It's a cycle. And the reason that they're so problematic to us is that we've put these beautiful A-frame houses in 1925, and these beautiful trees that shaded the houses that were probably planted when they built the house so that there would be shade, or maybe the house was built underneath it. And then a hurricane comes through, and yeah, it's mass devastation. I was doing some work. There's a chapter on in Florida Spectacular in the book about the history of hurricanes in Florida. And in doing some research for that, some of the former hurricanes that we previously hadn't thought the impact was so bad, if you were to reassess it today, scientists are saying they'd be some of the most devastational because of the way we've changed who lives there. Like hits to Miami, parts of the Panhandle. I mean, it's the development, it's the human presence that makes hurricanes a problem. If you can remove the human presence from it, they're awesome, amazing things. And the problem is we can't do that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. We neglected to talk about Hurricane Andrew, which was in the 90s, right?
Or is it 1995.
Early 95.
92? About 92.
How much that changed everything, you know, with building codes and there's a great Carl Hyson book. I can't remember.
Stormy weather.
And
it was 1992. I was wrong.
And just how much that changed things. But I also think, you know, the good thing, like you talked about the slow moving turtle, you do get warning. Whereas we had a tornado come through a couple years ago, and we just happened to have the TV on, and there was video that somebody had submitted to the news, and I could see it was going over a lake that was really not that far away. And I looked out the window and I saw it, and quickly we ran into the bathroom. And that's scary because you don't, you know, there are no storm cellars in Orlando. I mean, there's a couple cellars, but
they're not storm cellars.
I could see. Yeah, they're not storm cellars. I could probably count them on one hand. So, you know, we cross our fingers that it doesn't hit us. But, you know, I could see debris going around this cloud, and that was how close it was. And then the next day I went and I documented the damage, and you know, it's just luck if you don't get hit. And that's, to me, scarier. And that's what we're finding more and more and more, that it's like every night you turn on the news, there's another tornado that hit someplace.
I will take hurricanes over, I think, any other natural disaster. Tornadoes have no warning.
Yeah.
Earthquakes, you don't even know what's going to happen. You don't know what's going to go. Mudslides, fires. I mean, hurricanes, you have the most time to prepare. We have excellent technology. Thank you, Florida, for taking it on the chin for 100 years to get us where we are now with forecasting. It's definitely the best storm in terms of advance warning. It's why I live here and not North Dakota or Oklahoma or California. Oh, I feel like I'll take my chances with a hurricane. But it wasn't always that way. If you go to hurricanes.gov, which is the National Hurricane Center, their website, and you do some digging, they have some wonderful records and history that they've kept, because after every storm, they do a post-storm follow-up. But it used to look a little bit different. And I believe it was the hurricane of 1926. They didn't have a lot of warning. It was a ship offshore that radioed it into the weather service and said, hey, there's a storm out here and it's heading for you. And by the time they realized landfall was imminent, there was really no way, because their warning systems in the 20s were not sophisticated. But the forecaster in the National Weather Service office in South Florida, actually it's like 11 o'clock at night, he started running up and down the main streets, screaming that a hurricane was coming to try and wake people up so they could get to safety. It's like this Florida style Paul Revere, but instead of the British, it was a hurricane. And I think that's some dedication on the part of the forecaster.
It's interesting how it, hurricanes have also become part of our pop culture, Miami hurricanes. And then I remember there was a wine that was called Cat 5 for a while. It was a Florida made wine that I don't think was very good. Maybe a citrus wine. And it's become to be associated with Florida as much as any place. And it's just another one of our things, like pink flamingos and sunny days and citrus. Hurricanes are part of our iconography for the state.
Well, that's how we got pink flamingos where I live, is they blew in with Idalia last year. And apparently we're like, hey, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
We're going to hang out for a while. I have a lot of respect for hurricanes. I am fascinated by the forecasting. I have probably spent more time on the hurricanes.gov website than a lot of people. I have a favorite forecaster. Who's your favorite?
It's a local guy named Tom Terry, and he's the one who saw, we were watching him, he saw the turn that Hurricane Charlie was making that said, it's coming here, folks. And no, it wasn't expected. And it did. And it was scary. God, it was scary,
It's as they get bigger, you're going to see them more, because that was the case with Michael. Hurricanes weaken when they hit land.
Right.
Michael was a 5 when it made landfall at Port St. Joe area, but it didn't weaken enough and it swept across the state. I mean, it hit people who didn't have to have wind deductibles, who didn't have the right coverage. On the Florida-Georgia line at Florida Cavern State Park in Marianna, Florida, the park manager who lived on site, there were so many trees down, it took something like 7 days for him to be able to leave his house because the trees were blocking everything.
Jeez.
So, just go call your tree guy, Rick. It'll make me feel better. Have him come out, do a little inspection. Is that on a happy note? Does your cat, if you evacuate, where do you go? Because I see you have a cat. She or he is cleaning himself. He is good for the podcast.
We used to go to my mother-in-law's, and she has since moved to retirement home. So we'd probably go there. She has room for us. It's a fortress. So I think we could go there, and it's pretty close. I don't know what we would do with the cats now. It depends on how big the storm is. It's funny because I didn't have – so I had a longtime orange cat named Tigger, and Tigger passed away. Tigger came home, was put to rest in the yard. Two or three days later, a new orange cat appears in our backyard. So
do you have like a factory?
Well, it looked so much like my past cat that I made sure that he hadn't clawed his way out.
Oh my God.
The grave.
That's very Stephen King Pet Cemetery. Okay.
I know. Well, so this guy appears, and of course my wife starts to feed him. And so it was one of those storms was approaching, and we're like, we gotta save the cat. He's living outside this whole time, but he's not comfortable enough with us. So I spent 5 hours trying to con this guy into my arms to take him with us for one of those storms that we were going to my mother-in-law's house. And I could never get him comfortable enough. And so I guess it was the next day after we were able to get back home, we come home, and sure enough, he comes out of the bushes. But from that point on, this guy never leaves now. He comes in the house. He goes
very
in and
sweet.
Out. He's a very sweet cat, but he's very manipulatory, and he, makes me do what his bidding. And it's hard to imagine for 5 hours I sat there, and because it's like we were afraid we were going to lose him, but he kind of rules the roost. I'm not sure what we would do with him. We'd probably take him with us to my mother-in-law's. It's a hard thing because they're so important. Honestly, all the physical possessions in your house are not as important as your pets.
No. What matters is that anything with a heartbeat survives. But we do have pet-friendly shelters. Shelters suck. I tell people, don't go to shelters. Never evacuate unless you've been told to. And please don't go to a shelter if you have an option. But even with the pet friendly shelters, you have to register ahead of time. But Red Roof Inn takes pets, all of them. So that's your option right there. And plus, they're cheap.
La Quinta used to too. I'm not sure if they still do.
Yeah, Red Roof, I don't think even charges a fee. So that's nice.
That is nice.
Anyway, on that note, with your hurricane happy cat.
Can we just say, put in a plug for not getting bottled water before the next storm? There's so many other alternatives. What we do is we take all our Tupperware containers, fill them full of water, and stash them in our freezer. And then, you know, if the power goes off, you've got ice. And, you know, do the old-fashioned thing. Fill your bathtub. It's just not an excuse to go out and buy bottled water.
You know, even what you can do, and I've said this before on the podcast, and I'll put the link in the show notes again today, get a 5-gallon jug. If you don't want to buy a plastic one, they make glass ones on Amazon. They're super cheap. Get that. Get a couple. You know, what is it, a gallon per person per day? I would tell people, I think the guidance is expect to be without water for a week. So basically, okay, get two of those, just to err on the side of caution. Two of those per every person in your house. Fill those up. And then they make these really nice USB-powered faucets that go on top of them. You know, so you don't even have to fill your bathtub. You could just, you know, get a couple of the jugs. And it's, it's so much better than bottled water, too. It's bottled water, people don't realize, bottled water expires. So if you have bottled water sitting in plastic jugs from last year's hurricane, it probably has some bacteria in it because they're not required to treat it the same way your city is. So just do that one thing for us, for me and for Rick.
And the bathtub water can be used, you know, to put water in your toilet in case the water goes out.
That is true. That's a good use. But then you can't take a nice cold bath.
That's true too. Well, hopefully you know, like us, we have one shower, one bath, so we can only fill up the bath and we can take a nice cold shower.
Fair enough.
Let's knock on wood and hope that it's a painless hurricane season, because it's coming whether we like it or not. And there it is.
Happy hurricane hunting, Rick. I guess that's all I can say to you.
Do you have a hurricane chapter in your new book?
I do. I'm fascinated by hurricanes in Florida, and I go through the history of how we have changed how we forecast storms in the United States and in the world because of what we've learned in Florida. Like, and in it, I do make the comment that we have two speeds in Florida, and one is hurricanes coming, woohoo, party, and oh my God, we're all going to die. Like, we don't seem to have any middle ground. We're not good at moderation, but I've always been fascinated with hurricanes, and I think that I wanted to demystify and take some of the fear out of it for people. And I also wanted to show, because the book is about, like, the podcast and my newsletter and everything else, the things that are really good about Florida, how much good we've done with getting kind of the short end of the tropical weather stick, you know, how we've changed the game. And that's, to me, I think that's a pretty special thing. And I think the rest of the country should thank us for it. But I'm not sure the rest of the country agrees just yet. They haven't read the whole book.
Well, no one has yet, except for your readers.
All right. Rick, I will see you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Sounds good.
All right. Have a dry week.
You too.
Bye.